Chapter 17. Kat found herself standing beside a pile of rubble on an unfamiliar street corner. The concussive blasts from the explosions were making it nearly impossible to stay on her feet. Men in uniforms were running about in all directions, some shouting orders in a strange language, some tending to wounded comrades, and others firing their rifles almost non-stop at the enemy. This was strange enough on its own. Yet the strangest thing of all was the scale. The men were enormous, like towering giants. One very nearly stepped on her. She would have been crushed underfoot had she not jumped out of the way just in time and scrambled over to a pile of debris near a burned-out shop. Dust was hanging in the air like a thick fog. Her mind felt equally clouded as it struggled to make a glimmer of sense out of all this. Then a man fell just a few feet away from her, a savage wound in his chest. Though the insignia he wore was unfamiliar, she recognized the unique shape of his helmet from her studies when living on Earth. It was unmistakable. He was German. "What the hell?" she said. But rather than words, a guttural growl issued from her mouth. The squeal of a tank penetrated the chaos. It was advancing down the street, straight toward her. Her eyes searched desperately for somewhere to run, but the street was clogged with soldiers. There was no way she could get through them unseen. A lone soldier slid to the ground beside her, frantically trying to fix something that was wrong with his weapon. Kat was paralyzed with fear. Then the man's eyes drifted over to where she was standing, and she realized he couldn't see her. A dream, she thought. It had to be. There could be no other explanation. But this was one hell of a dream. Never had she experienced one that felt so real, right down to the acrid smells and ear-shattering sounds. It was all so unlike the vague, detached way she normally experienced dreams. Then there was the fear. She'd had nightmares many times, and always there was something in the back of her mind that kept her from losing herself in the terror. It was as if she knew subconsciously throughout that it wasn't real. But this time, there was no such reassurance. Nothing whatsoever to say that, in reality, she was safely in her tent, snuggled up between Kira and her father. Whatever this was, she had no intention of staying put. A bullet pinged off the ground just in front of her, sending bits of concrete flying up into her face. Automatically, she shielded her eyes. But it wasn't with her hands. It was with a wing. A white wing. "What the fuck?" Yet again, her voice came out as a high-pitched growl. She looked down at herself with astonishment. From what she could tell, she was a tiny dragon. Why in the hell would she dream that? And why a white one? An image of Maitre entered her mind, along with the memory of what Kira had said. Her elf friend was convinced that when the Imperial weapon had struck the dragon, it had somehow created a closer connection to the power of Lumnia. "After all, it's just the contained energy of the world," Kira had pointed out. "And dragons have always had a mysterious relationship with Lumnia." Kat tried to think. Was Maitre trying to speak to her through her dreams? Another bullet hit close by, raising more dust and debris to pepper her face. This time, without thinking, she took to the sky. In seconds, she was well above the bombed-out buildings and the chaos of the battle. Momentarily, she felt a rush of fear. But this was quickly replaced by a feeling of sheer joy. Never had she felt a sensation remotely like it. The absolute freedom was exhilarating. Her wings seemed to know precisely what to do even before she had thought it. She was climbing, turning, and diving by sheer instinct alone. Below, the men continued to scurry about. From her lofty position, their war seemed petty and insignificant. As she picked out the details of the battle below, she realized her eyesight was unusually keen. Dragon's eyes, she thought. She circled around, contemplating where to go next. Surely there were better sights than this to be seen. It was a dream, after all. She might as well take advantage of it. She started to turn into the direction of the sun, but then turned sharply. Something inside was telling her it was not time to leave. Not yet. Cat swooped down until she was no more than 100 or so feet above the tops of the buildings, and began to glide, allowing the wind to keep her airborne while reducing her speed. A sense of urgency was creeping into her mind. But what it was she needed to do, she had no idea. Then, at the corner of a block, she saw him. Ethan. He was running headlong across the avenue with 10 or more German soldiers accompanying a tank, all firing their weapons at him. Given that they were so close, she couldn't imagine how they were missing. But miss they did. And to her great relief, she saw him make it safely to the other side and into a ruined building. A moment later, Marcus appeared and attempted the same dash across. A cold chill shot through her. It was just not possible for him to avoid the bullets as well. However, to her confusion, the soldiers ignored him completely. Still bemused, Cat circled to the back of the building, but there was no sign of Ethan emerging on the other side. Help him. The words came to her from somewhere far away, like a voice carried on a breeze. She flew to the front of the building and landed near the door. Upon entering, she quickly spotted Marcus. He was peering into each room as he passed, calling out Ethan's name. Why did Ethan not answer? Then, as she scurried past, she saw precisely why. It was no longer Marcus. His flesh had turned to a black smoke that swirled and fell away, dissipating the moment it separated from his body. Cat hurried on, now desperate to find Ethan before the thing masquerading as Marcus did. She had to warn him of the danger. She found him at the rear of the building, obviously searching for another way out. She cried out his name. But as before, only the harsh croak of a baby dragon came out. Moreover, he hadn't heard her, nor could he see her. Cat ran to the door. The creature behind was getting closer. She hurried over to a pile of broken furniture and bricks in the corner. Ethan! She called out again. This time, he looked directly at her. And now he could see her. But in this form, and unable to speak, there was no way to let him know who she really was. As if someone had flicked a switch, the world around her suddenly went dark. No! I have to warn him! She cried out. But she had no idea how to get back. It's just a dream, she said, trying to calm herself. It's not real. Gradually, her anxiety lessened. A gentle wind brushed across her face, and then a star-strewn sky appeared above. Her dragon's eyes gave color to the night that she had never seen before. Subtle shades of red, violet, green, and yellow danced on the wind like threads of a rainbow. Below was a vast expanse of open grassland, dull and unremarkable when looked upon with human eyes, but spectacular in its beauty and texture as she saw it now. She wondered if dragons really viewed the world this way, or was this just part of the dream? A stone spire surrounded by 4 smaller towers came into view. 2 figures had climbed into the adjacent courtyard through a breach in the curtain wall that had once served as its protection. As before, the pair below were Ethan and Marcus. No sooner had she spotted them when a gale-force wind sprung up, striking her head-on and driving her further away. She fought to resist it, but this was no ordinary wind. Like something evil, it washed away the beauty of the night, leaving the world cold and grey instead. The harder she struggled against its force, the stronger it blew. Unable to overcome its power, she went into a dive. The wind followed her, as if seeking to crush her hard into the ground. When only a few feet high, she pounded her wings furiously to slow the descent. Despite this, she landed with a mighty thud and rolled several feet before coming to a halt. The impact sent pain shooting through her ribs and legs, and for more than a minute she was unable to move. How could she feel pain in a dream? Normally, something like this would have had her sitting bolt upright in bed, gasping for breath. But not this time. Ethan. Her overwhelming desire to help him drove away the pain. Struggling to her feet, she saw she was still a good distance away from the spire. The tiny dragon's body was now nothing but a hindrance. Nonetheless, she ran as fast as the short little legs would carry her. The wind continued to plague her progress, but with her body so low to the ground, it could not stop her completely. After what seemed like an eternity, she finally reached the wall. The door to the towers was closed, and the windows too high to reach without being caught by the wind again. She raced to the other side, all the time looking for a small crack in the stone to squeeze through. None presented itself. As she passed a marble mausoleum, she noticed that the gate was wide open. Perhaps luck was with her after all. Footprints in the dust and an opening in the floor told her that at least for the moment, it was going her way. Then she looked down through the opening and quickly changed her mind. She could clearly see how long a drop it was to the floor below, and descending the ladder with four legs would be tricky at best. Perhaps even impossible. Taking a deep breath, she instead opted for the simple solution and stepped in. The moment she passed the lip of the hole, she opened her wings and tried to stop her rapid descent. Though unable to fly inside such a confined space, this did manage to significantly slow her fall. Even so, the landing still came with quite a heavy bump. Together with the pain from her earlier fall, she was forced to pause for a few seconds to recover. With her concern for Ethan still driving her, she set off down the long hallway at full speed, her tiny talons clicking and scraping as she ran. Each turn she made now seemed guided. It was as if someone was constantly urging her in the right direction. This was confirmed when she heard a sudden series of shouts echoing down the stone walls. The words were indistinguishable, but the voice was unmistakably Ethan's. There was no mistaking the fury and despair in his cries, either. Panic gripped her, and she urged herself to run even faster. She entered a round chamber. There were 12 recesses in the wall to her left. 11 of these held unusual-looking black crystals. The other one was empty. For a moment, all was silence. Then she heard Ethan speaking to someone beyond an archway on the opposite side. Even the short distance to the next room seemed insurmountably long, and what she saw on arriving there gripped her heart in a cold vice. A pile of ash and scorched stones suggested that magic had been used recently to destroy a foe. Though Marcus was nowhere to be seen, Ethan was standing there with his face a mask of torment and indecision. And, almost unbelievably, directly in front of him, with arms held wide and a twisted scowl on her face, was an exact image of herself. Her human self. Utterly confused, she couldn't even begin to guess what had already transpired. All she could comprehend was the present. Her doppelganger was daring Ethan to kill her. "It's not me!" Cat shouted, but only the dragon's call came out. "I'm right here! Ethan, look at me!" She tried to move in closer, but an unseen force blocked her way. She thrashed and struggled without success. Even an inch of headway felt impossible. "Ethan, please!" At last, she caught his attention. He turned his head and looked her directly in the eye, sending fierce elation running through her tiny body. The force that had halted her was now trying to pull her away. Cat would not be denied. With her success giving her renewed strength, she broke free and lurched forward, constantly calling out a warning. For a fleeting moment, she thought she could feel him reaching back. In this very instant of triumph, the all-consuming darkness returned. "You have proved to be quite a nuisance," a deep, hollow-sounding voice told her. Cat could see nothing. Even so, she was uncomfortably aware of a malign presence close by. Too close. But she had no way to escape it. "Who are you?" To her amazement, her normal voice had returned. I think you know. Yes, she did. And now she understood exactly what had happened. Moreover, she knew how it had happened. It was when she had touched the wounded Maitre. The contact had brought her closer to the power of Lumnia than even Kira believed possible. So much closer, in fact, it had enabled her to reach out across the void separating her from Ethan. She had peered into the heart of Lumnia, where he now struggled for his very life, and she had helped him see through Shinzan's deception. Help him? Is that what you think you have done? Snapped Shinzan. All you have done is confuse him. Your little trick has shaken his very reason. And now he has likely doomed himself, and you too. He will never leave this place, and you can live with the knowledge that you are the one to blame.
You're lying, she shot back. Ethan will beat you. I know he will.
Shinzan sighed. Poor, stupid creature. Like the rest of your pathetic race, you believe that hope can save you. Let me enlighten you, child. Hope did not save any of the other worlds I have destroyed. The millions of other beings who have fallen to my power, they all had hope, too. And every single one of them is now dead. Though his words struck at her deeply, her resolve refused to falter.
That means nothing. Those other worlds didn't have Ethan Dragonvein.
Shinzan laughed. And very soon neither will this one. Now, if you will excuse me, it is time this game came to an end. I cannot allow you to interfere any longer. A ghostly figure appeared a few feet away. She stepped back, but the figure then transformed into a column of black flames that raced toward her, enveloping her entire body. Astonishingly, instead of the anticipated heat, it was bitter cold that tore unrelentingly into her flesh. At the same time, it felt as if all the air was being sucked from her lungs. The awful realization then came. Her connection to Lumnia was being torn away. Bit by bit, it was being consumed by Shinzan's evil. As much as he wanted to fight, she was totally helpless against the hunger. Yes, that's what it was, a hunger, eternal and incapable of ever being satisfied. The thought of Ethan doing battle with such malevolence was terrifying. How could anyone stand against it? In that moment, she understood exactly why he was resigned to his own death. Because it was inevitable. There was only one way he could win, and it would take a man with Ethan's heart to go through with it. There was hope, but not the kind she desired. That was lost, and there was nothing she could do to change it. Cat jerked upright, gasping for air. Her clothes were drenched in sweat, and her heart was racing wildly. Gradually, as the memory of what she had experienced entered the fog of her mind, she started to weep. After a minute, not wanting her father to see her in such a state, she managed to choke back the tears. She could see that Kira was still sleeping soundly, as were her father and the rest of the tent's occupants. She held out her hands to examine them, and then touched at her face, half expecting to feel scales rather than flesh. She closed her eyes. Each second that passed was making her experience seem less real, even though deep in her heart she knew differently. The camp was quiet. It was still early. How long had she been asleep? She knew she had stayed up late talking with her father about the good times he was planning after the war. Most of it centered around travel and leisure. Fantasies, really. As king, most of his time would be consumed with repairing the terrible destruction caused by the conflict. There was also the inescapable fact that half of Lumnia still supported the Emperor. They would somehow have to find a way of restoring good relations without plunging the world back into more endless battles. A challenging task, to say the least. That would be the reality of their post-war days. Still,
It had been nice to dream for a short time.
With a sigh, Cat rose and crossed over to the tent's exit. A stiff breeze blew in when she lifted the flap, causing her to wrap her arms around her chest. She hadn't realized it was so cold outside, but now she could see that a light snow had blanketed the ground. In the dim pre-dawn light, everything around her radiated softly with a mystical glow, bringing an instinctive smile to her lips. Returning to her bedroll, she put on her boots and draped the blanket over her shoulders. There was no chance she would fall back to sleep, not with the strange images still so fresh in her head. After stepping outside, she began walking aimlessly about the camp. The brisk air felt cleansing, as if it could help to rid her of evil thoughts and foul deeds. After a short time, she came across King Halvar. He was sitting on a stool beside the remnants of a campfire, poking at the embers with a stick. He looked up as she drew close.
"I see I'm not the only one unable to sleep."
"Bad dreams," she explained.
The king rose with a heavy grunt.
"I can't abide the cold. Just another thing I miss about my home. No foul weather there."
"This isn't so bad," Cat told him. "Wait until you see a real blizzard."
He chuckled.
"I hope I never do. I prefer the depths of the mountains to all this openness."
He gestured for her to join him as he began walking along at a leisurely pace.
"I imagine this is difficult for your people," Cat remarked.
"Actually, I'm surprised how well many have adapted to the change," he replied. "As you know, we didn't always live underground. I think for some, being outside has stirred feelings that have lain dormant within their hearts. A sense of freedom, perhaps."
Cat could hear the melancholy in the Dwarf King's voice.
"Does it bother you?"
"In a way, yes. I can already see that the way of life I was hoping to preserve will soon be gone."
He gave her a sideways smile.
"You and your people, and the elves, have all seen to that. It will be hard for old relics like me to find their place in the world once the war is over."
"I don't think you're a relic."
"That's because you have a kind heart, my dear."
He looked at her and laughed softly.
"Do not be concerned. I have come to terms with it. I know that what lies ahead is better than what we have now. I will continue to lead my people, but only for a time. It will be the next generation, not mine, that defines what a dwarf is to become in the future."
He ceased walking for a moment.
"And that's for the best. Until you and Ethan came, I had never known a single day without the yoke of Shinzan around my neck. The children of the New World will not be burdened with such tragedy. They will be free to explore and grow, free to form new bonds of friendship with all the peoples of Lumnia. For that, I am truly happy. By then, I will no longer be needed."
Cat touched his shoulder.
"Don't say that. Your people love you. Besides, not everything will change."
"Yes, they love me," he agreed, "and I have no doubt that I will be remembered. But it will be as a warrior king, not as a wise ruler. The songs about me will be of the battles I have fought, and of the bravery of those who fought by my side. I must be contented with this."
He took hold of Cat's hand, and they continued walking.
"There are worse fates, I suppose. To be remembered at all is a gift, one that few receive."
They moved on until reaching the edge of the camp where the sentries were keeping a vigilant watch. Cat paused to look out over the snow-dusted hills. Halvar's melancholy words had made her start to wonder about her own future. Ethan would prevail, she was still sure of that. And when he did, what then? She had no desire to inherit the throne of Ralmaria, even though she knew that was precisely what her father would be expecting. The rapid beating of hooves snapped her back into the moment. One elf and two human soldiers were already gathering close to her and the king, while six dwarves hurried out to meet the approaching rider. It was one of the many scouts sent to spy on the movement of the Imperial Army. Since the first battle, it had been difficult to anticipate what they might do. Their march was relentless and swift, and though they had more than enough men to turn and fight, they had chosen to stay well ahead. What's more, the distance between the two armies was growing. None of the Allied commanders believed they were fleeing, but their objective remained a mystery. The rider jumped from his saddle and bowed, then held out a folded note.
"This is from Queen Barathis, Your Highness," he said.
Halvar read the message immediately. A smile quickly formed.
"Her army marches to join us," he said, "and Linial rides with them."
"There is more," said the messenger. "I spoke to Lady Kira's scouts. They wish me to convey that the Imperial army has now split in two. The Silent Ones continue marching north, but the rest of their force has been left behind."
The implications of this were immediately apparent in Halvar's expression. His smile faded.
"Come," he said briskly to Kat. "We must rouse Kira and your father at once.